This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Well, you know, it's been a very interesting experience working, you know, arriving at the museum and encountering this piece as first an empty file folder and then having the work come to life through documentation that Amy has found and things in our archives that were scattered across but not collected. And, you know, I think that the piece, you know, what the, you know, in a really interesting article about Oppenheim the same year as he created this piece, someone described his activities as interrupting the matrix that shapes human and natural activities, which I think in many ways really encapsulates a lot of my interpretation of the work of, you know, thinking about this idea of a displacement, a change in the institutional structure at the museum that incorporates both the idea of an earthwork or land art and also Genesis' emergent thinking about body art or performance. And I think in many ways the work sits at this very pivotal and very complicated and hard to parse point somewhere between his work that's more specifically engaging with land and the natural environment and his work that's thinking about the body and using the body as a jumping off point to investigate human relationships. And so, you know, our initial iteration of the work that we just did last night, I think, you know, posed as many questions as offering answers in terms of how we parse this work in relationship to Dennis's larger body of work and in relationship to the museum and his larger thinking about museums and galleries as institutional spaces and thinking about both spaces and context, but also the people, bodies, and human relationships that form that environment. And so I think, you know, if I had to sort of sum up my thinking about the work, it would be that it truly, I think, engages all three of those axes and trying to figure out a way to present the work that really teases out some of those different layers of the piece in the way that we might interpret it.
And not to be reductive about it, but do you have, I mean, could you talk us through what you think is happening when the guard is guarding this land area? I know that for you, as for all of us, there are different readings to
sure.
bear upon it, but is there like one, like, let's say, not dominant, but primary way that you read that activity?
You know, I don't think that there is a single way that I read it. I think that one of the points of the work is that there's multiple ways of engaging with it. One way you might think about it is as a sort of displacement, as a transposition of the space, in this case of gallery number 6, onto exterior land, and you might think about the work exclusively in those terms, as working through a sort of question about land and space and how we value space and create the idea of sacred space, both in institutional structures like museums as well as outside. You know, from my perspective, working on the piece within the institution, within the museum, I would also say that a major element of the work is disrupting some of the social relationships of the gallery as well, at the museum space, where, you know, you are asking a guard to not just create a reinterpretation of a museum gallery space outside, but also asking them to think through and evaluate their function as it relates to the museum and their role within the institutional structure and how that relationship manifests itself in all sorts of ways. I thought one of the things that was very interesting about the work yesterday is that the nature of who came and how they came was really that in many ways the entire museum structure was exteriorized, right? It wasn't just that we had a guard outside, it was that much of the museum staff also went outside and not just went outside, but participated in a very different way of formulating the relationships within the museum. Now, you know, it's very interesting to think about whether or not Dennis would have envisioned that as part of the work, but from what we understand from what happened in 1970, that was part of the work. That really what happened in many ways is that much of the museum staff, as well as other people, were transposed outside in much the same way as the literal physical space of the gallery was transposed outside, and all kinds of different social relationships and questions are asked. So at the same time that I think that there is a profoundly meditative nature to the piece that offers the museum guard a different set of relationships, I think that that was writ large in terms of the way that the institution responded to the piece as well.
And then one last question, and then we'll take our turn. So what do you understand to have happened in 1970? I know that Bill is not here with us today, but in these last 4 months and in the
sure,
months
sure.
leading up to to today, how do you understand like the institutional memory of the work,
sure.
but also even what took place in 1970?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting question because it's something we've, all three of us, been working through, the relationship between, you know, the only person who claims to have a clear memory of the piece is the exhibition's original curator, Bill Fegley, who recalls the work as quite different than the documentation that Dennis later produced with the piece. He recalls the work in 1970 as something that happened in a somewhat impromptu fashion and that lasted far less time than the original work, or than Dennis had recorded the piece later, and also had a different title, which was Energy Displacement as opposed to Guarded Land Area. And you know, we don't know exactly what these relationships are. Bill may recall correctly, he may not. Dennis may have shifted his thinking about the work and altered what he said about it later. I mean, we really can't say definitively what the relationship between those things are. You know, what Bill recalls is that in 1970, Dennis returned to the museum after creating Concentration Pit, came up with the idea for this work, and then had the museum guard walk in formation of his memory of the overall museum, the overall space of the museum, reconstructing his entire daily route outside. And then when he completed that activity, which Bill recalls as lasting about 15 or 20 minutes, he returned inside. And that is different in duration and in nature than what this later documentation has indicated. And, you know, what I really came to as we worked through it is that in some ways that in and of itself is very interesting, right? That even, you know, I mean, in some ways, if what we're doing is working towards truly apprehending the work, we have to engage with the fact that even if we choose Bill's memory or we choose the documentation or we choose something in between them, no matter what we do, it's not going to exactly replicate the original piece. That there's always going to be a difference in terms of time, space, and our interpretation of the piece, given the 45 years and the vast changes that have occurred in between them. So in some ways, I think, you know, the question of what exactly happened in 1970 is not exactly the right one in terms of thinking about how we might go about the idea of a new iteration of the work, because no matter what we do, it's going to be informed by all sorts of decisions. You know, one of them is, of course, that we don't have the guard who performed it in 1970, and a big part of the piece is the agency of the guard to dictate the nature of the performance. And so even if we had and followed the exact specifications of duration and movement of the original work, it would still be a very different piece.
Amy, should I jump in?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
So I have a very provisional reading of the work, and I see, I think of what happened in 1970 as more as an investigation than a work, in a way.
Yeah.
As an investigation into a variety of questions concerning power relations, concerning preciousness, but in particular, I'm interested in how the guard is being invited, incentivized, encouraged to reconstruct an understanding of themselves, their relationship to the institution, but also society more generally.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, the concept that I keep coming back to is this concept of the threshold, that the guard is constructing spatially, psychologically, and socially by guarding this land area. And I think this is a really powerful term that maybe gets at a transformative dimension to the work, maybe not so much for the public, but for the guard, him or herself, as he or she circles this land area. I think that in a way, I mean, as Mikhail Bakhtin theorizes, a threshold is this moment of almost crisis or rupture when a normative or hierarchical relationship is transformed and interrupted. And I think what's so interesting about this work is this investigation that's playing out in it on the part of the guard, I think, as to what their relationship is to themselves, to value, to the institution that they keep facing as they encircle this land area, but also to society more generally. And so I'm really interested in thinking about it less as a performance and with a capital P, and more as a performative gesture that's embodied and that's provisional and that's that places the guard both in an extremely vulnerable position, but also again in a potentially transformative position. And so I keep coming back to that, the notion that a threshold is being constructed, and of course we are also part of that threshold as spectators, as audience members. But I'm really interested in how he's constructed another dynamic and one that really focuses on the guard and that concerns the guard and his or her relationships. And I'm particularly interested in how that investigation unfolds over time, not just in the 2 hours that the guard is guarding, but also, you know, what happens after they finish guarding. And I'm interested also even in what it asks of the institution. I'm interested in what it means in 1970, but also in 2015, for an institution to present a work which also raises critical questions about power relations and power dynamics. And so I'm interested in how, ostensibly, yes, it's about the guard, as I've been saying, primarily for me, but it's also a work that disturbs and perturbs the institution, potentially, and how it subsequently relates to the guard, how the guard relates to it. But also how the public sees the guard and sees the institution. So it's the seemingly minor investigation that raises all these critical questions and potentially disturbs and upsets normal hierarchical relations henceforth going forward. And so in this sense, I have a very like textual relationship to the work that finds in the work all sorts of codes and coded implications. That may not be ostensibly kind of explicitly articulated, but that we can deduce from it almost in an archaeological kind of way, or even in an imaginative philosophical way.
Well, and I think, you know, for me that has been a really crucial component of how we've envisioned this project today, which is to really incorporate the perspective of the museum guard in the work, so that we're not just, you know, offering this as a kind of gesture that happens at a single moment, but allowing the guards the opportunity to reflect on the experience, to return to their jobs, and then to engage in a conversation about how the work has impacted them and have that be part of how the piece gets understood or interpreted moving forward, which I think, you know, raises all kinds of other questions, but I think allows the museum to better incorporate that interrogation of social hierarchies, institutional structure, and really have that be front and center in the work in terms of how we think about and interpret it and think about its efficacy and its duration far beyond the time the guard is actually walking.
But I mean, the critical question that for me it raises is, can an institution interrogate its institutionality? I mean, in a way, what Dennis is enabling is a scenario where the guard is invited to reflect on their relationship in this power distribution, power dynamic, power field. Can an institution choreograph that process, or does that irreparably kind of limit the power of that transformation in a way? So I'm interested in how do we all have agency in relation to the work, and how we determine the work even as we try to reveal the work in a way. But Amy, I don't know, do you want to offer your reading or one of your
point is a very interesting one in terms of the kind of the way it's kind of orchestrated through the institution. It's sort of like, how much self-examination can you really do in a institution? But my primary focus has been the text and exactly what Dennis wrote to try to understand the work fully, even in terms of this idea of the guards' position. I noticed one text had small letters, and another text I found that was typed had the entire text in capital letters, so that the name of the institution and then Art Guard were all capitalized. So in terms of the text, which again I do try to refer to as carefully as I can, because that's, you know, an element of the formalization, but I think there are a lot of clues in there that we can, there's information there that we need to refer to. So there was this kind of idea of hierarchy. In other words, do you, between the name of the institution and Art Guard, so that he's not diminished in terms of really being an abstraction. And, you know, the interesting way the work evolved in terms of pieces that were kind of put together and things were brought out later that weren't considered initially. So it kind of evolved. But I think that probably the best way to look at it in terms of language would be kind of a variation. Like, there was a work that he did in 70. There's a variation that's been kind of done here, which is a close variation to what was done initially, but vastly different. In other words, the piece can exist in variations. Mm-hmm. And it's another thing that I was interested in terms of Katie's point, that initially it was the guard's route, daily route, which was what was textualized or used as a text, and then it developed that it was Dennis's indication was the individual gallery. So there are a lot of interesting questions there, but that's why I think you have to kind of refer to it as a variation. A variation from memory. Now, the variation from Dennis's archive, or what can be gleaned from his going to that as a resource, may be different. But, I mean, I do think that probably what you're discussing, he was somewhat aware of, although it was very spontaneous. And he had 5 minutes, and I was thinking about this in terms of other works that he did where he wanted to hire a guard to do various actions. So it was within a continuum. But I do like the idea. I think one of the things he was trying to work with was the idea of the kind of the spatial identity between a plan in a room, a documentation on a wall, and an actual space. So my interest would be going forward in trying to actualize that kind of experience for the viewer somehow. In other words, there's a photograph of an event that's outside. Mm-hmm. In the gallery, there's an actual gallery that the documentation is referring to, and then there is a land area outside. So it's like kind of being in these different places at once, I think, was probably, you know, something that he had in mind a little bit, that I think could be really an enriching experience for people. I mean, because the whole position of the documentation as an artwork per se that's on the gallery wall next to paintings and sculpture is a tentative one for some audiences. So I think that to leave the documentation as an artwork alone without much institutional framing of it gives the work more life and more ability to resonate for spectators in a larger way.
Actually, I wonder, Amy, you know, I mean, you know, in this conversation and in past conversations, we've talked a lot about this question of how the work engages this sort of institutional critique or thinks about questions of hierarchy and power within the museum. And I'm curious because, you know, you're the one among us that really knew Dennis and were part, you know, were really intimately part of his thinking about his work. How much of that you think he envisioned as part of the work?
Well, I think he thought about it pretty carefully. Mm-hmm. I think it was something really on his mind, yeah. The critique of the institution, in a way. Or the play, it's like a little bit of a love-hate relationship. I mean, the piece is a walk. I mean, okay, a walk is an artwork in 1970. Mm-hmm. So to have some legitimacy, I think he has to refer it back. So in that sense, the proximity allows what can be seen as a very simple activity to gain status in terms of perception as a performance activity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's all these... I mean, this is maybe taking a slightly different direction, but there's all these illicit aspects. You know, yesterday we were thinking about the work in relation to trespassing, right? That this land area happens to not belong to the museum, right? And so one, in a way, is the guard is trespassing and guarding land that, in a way, the guard has no otherwise claim to guard, right? No right to claim. But that also an institution in a way is always trespassing in terms of how the public perceives something. The guard also is caught up in this power dynamic. And then the artist is invited to make a work, but then the artist is making a work which trespasses on what is the appropriate purview of the artist. And and critiques the institution in various ways. And so there's this illicit nature to it, even at the same time as the guard is doing something sacred, right?
Yeah.
A ritualistic activity is producing a sacred relationship to this otherwise empty land area. And this heroic act of endurance is something also that we can think really think about with a sense of respect and beauty and perseverance in a way. There's also this illicit dimension to the work, this obscene dimension to the work, right? The guard is disturbing and perturbing what the institution understands value to be, mm-hmm. but also the guard is interrupting the institution's conception of the obedient role of the guard in a way. Right? Like, there's all these ways in which the guard is disturbing and interrupting a normative way of thinking about institutionality, cultural value, spectatorial relationship to work.
Right? Yeah, the spectatorial relationship is very interesting too, I think, because last night we had some engagement from the museum staff in the execution of the work, which is something that I... we did have a little discussion about that.
You mean like, you know, a concern for the guards' act of endurance or their perseverance or their you know, their comfort leading to somebody providing water. Is that what you meant?
Yes. Like this? No. Yeah.
And so, what questions does that raise for you?
I'm on the archival. I'm in the archival zone. Katie is more in the institutional zone. Aaron, you're kind of in the provisional zone, which I basically I follow your position in terms of his kind of artistic statement, but I follow your in terms of larger issues that he was trying to do. So I think that that's a pull from the institution that wouldn't really help understand what he was trying to do in terms of the solitary nature of the work.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, because there were a number of, as there always would be any time that you are in a public space, there were a number of unexpected things that occurred, from, you know, someone in the audience deciding to offer the guard water, to, you know, birds and dogs and kids that came into the space of the work in various ways. And, you know, in some ways I sort of feel like, you know, this whole entire process has been part of an investigation, and that to, you know, to foreclose things that arise naturally in this reimagination of the work is to, you know, also foreclose the possibility of conversation and debate about those things that, you know, in many ways I felt like when someone felt compelled to offer her water, that I didn't want to stop that from happening, because I think that that then raised all kinds of additional questions about how we think about duration, and gave all of us a duration and endurance and the nature of the work and the institutional relationship between the guard and a woman who happened, in fact, to be her supervisor, right, that this then raised all kinds of other questions that allowed us to think further into the work and its relationships. And so, you know, my feeling about that was that, you know, was that something that I had necessarily wanted in the staging of the work? No. Was it something that I expected? No. But as it occurred, it also felt, to me at least, like it forestalled possibilities for conversation and thinking about the work in different ways that I didn't want to foreclose. And I think, you know, whether it interrupted the experience of the work, which I think is arguable, I think it also opened up additional routes of conversation and investigation and helped us think through what is it about this piece that is intrinsic to the work and what, you know, can be thought about in flux, or what things are subject to change, or do we allow to occur, or what kinds of things do we prohibit from happening, which I think is a very interesting conversation from an institutional and curatorial perspective as well. Like, what, you know, how much control do we exert over an beyond just providing, you know, the basic instructions and the basic format for events to unfold, which seems very much like what happened in the first iteration as well. And at what point do we decide that something interferes with Dennis's original perspective enough to stop it? And at what point do we allow these things to occur in the spirit of the original work as a kind of preliminary investigation that would be subject to additional variations or iterations? And, you know, I'm still working through that question. And I think that as we continue, that's really going to be one of the questions at the core of our thinking, right? What do we allow to happen, and how, and what is the role of the institution, of the curator, in helping to define the parameters of the piece? How much of it is the agency of the guard? Where does the spectator or audience fit in, and how do we understand those relationships? And to my mind, part of it is, in fact, that will vary every single time and be very rich as it develops. But I know maybe we did not all agree on that.
Well, you're raising so many interesting questions. One of them, I think, concerns like what the relationship of museum staff are to the museum itself, and is the museum staff, do they constitute the public of the work, or do they still constitute the museum? Do they still represent the museum? And so when the supervisor, for instance, provides water, they are not just anybody. They're not a jogger who happens to jog through the work. They are a representative of the institution, and this work is seeking to reconstruct and call attention to the limits and the borders of the institution, right? And so there's also a reassertment of that, of the museological in that moment, not just
because, I mean, water. Normally the instruction would have been from the artist. The institution let the guard go to do the work. But the communication, I think, with the guard was from Dennis as to what he was going to actually do. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
And then the other interesting question for me is, there's something very powerful about the fact that in 1970 this only ostensibly happened once. Right? It wasn't a serial activity. It was an investigation, but it was singular in a way. And its singularity enables us to read all these hypothetical questions into it.
But...
And so is there a danger to serializing, in a way?
Consistent with his other, with, again, the investigation that I did, and realizing that he did refer to two different galleries, 5 and 6, along with Bill's, and the nature of his work in terms of... series, gallery transplant, several different rooms or different locations, and he worked in series.
But not in this particular case.
Yeah.
This investigation happens once.
Yeah.
In this particular way. Right?
He's
investigating in different ways, and thus experimenting in series. But this particular provisional activity happens only once.
It's interesting, though. I mean, I tend to, you know, agree with what I understand you to be saying, Amy, which is that, you know, each of these investigations exists as an independent work, but that they're also part of a larger investigation. You know, I mean, Dennis said very beautifully once that, you know, he imagined himself to be taking apart the gallery slowly. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a way in which all of these different investigations and juxtapositions and transformations and transpositions that he's doing in galleries and museums across the world in different ways were all part of this same effort that to me seems like it was part of an overall durational project that he envisioned as sort of a way of dismantling or rethinking the gallery and institutional structure, and so that even if in this instance it was one event, that it was, he saw it as a durational thing. I don't know if you think that was true.
Well, I mean, there's duration in terms of time.
Right.
But I just think that I don't totally see the logic of doing it in one institution on as a series. I mean, that gets into kind of a minute detailing of the execution between one guard and the next. I'm not sure how interesting that is, as opposed to thinking about different museum institutions, how they would take on the project and how they would work with the artist's notes and records to do it, say, once, as a kind of investigation of that structure. But I'm not sure about the necessity to do it on subsequent nights at a single institution.
I know there's something ironic to me, for instance, saying this, given that I also have been very overly eager from the beginning to think about how this investigation could be continued, right, and revisited and reread in different ways. But more and more, as I think about it, I think about how the work or this investigation in 1970 also is this kind of very, like, kind of almost invisible interruption, this very spontaneous, seemingly spontaneous perturbation, right? And then it's gone. And then it's over, and almost no trace remains except the footprints, maybe, in the grass, and some minimal documentation that we still struggle to reconcile.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me which thinks that curatorially, you know, and with full respect to you, Kay, like, however well-intentioned your construction, the fact is that you're embedded within an institution, and the institution is what, in a way, Dennis is trying to interrogate, and what happens when the institution anticipates the interrogation. And the interrogation is almost sequenced. I mean, the experiment, this provisional investigation is sequenced and almost announced and publicized such that the institution anticipates it and knows it. And that transforms, in a way, the symbolism and transformative potential for the guard, but also for the institution, but even for the public, right, when it becomes serialized in that way. That's what I was thinking, in a way.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, on some level, does it have to remain almost forgettable, almost overlooked, for it to have the impact that Dennis is imagining it to potentially have?
No, and I mean, I think that, you know, the second that an institution announces and endorses a project like this, of course, there are complete limits set up in terms of the nature of the critique that's possible. That's 100% true. I mean, you know, we have engaged in this project, you know, really because we are inviting the kind of reflection on the institution that this piece allows. That means in many ways that the nature of the disruption is different. But I think, you know, it's very interesting because, you know, my perspective on it has been that, you know, in certain senses, if it hasn't been disruptive in the sense of sort of like really creating a lot of friction or dissonance, it's in fact been really interesting to see how the process of setting up this project has really changed so many aspects of the way that the institution functions and the relationships between people in very fundamental ways that, you know, are perhaps different than the original iteration of it, but I think, you know, equally powerful in terms of, you know, their capacity to really have an impact on the way that the museum imagines itself and imagines social relationships within the museum. You know, one of the reasons that we wanted to do it more than once is that we wanted to sort of figure out a way to acknowledge the fact that, you know, the agency of the guard in many ways determines the work, and there was one single guard that did it, and you cannot replicate the experience of that particular guard. And so our idea was to have multiple guards' voices and perspectives to try and sort of come up with a broader sensibility about what this project was and what it meant from a variety of different perspectives. And we have a vast array of people who are part of this, from a museum guard that just arrived from Maine to New Orleans 2 weeks ago and is an artist himself, to people that have been at the museum for 20 plus years, and a real broad demographic range of people that have expressed interest in being part of this. And I think that that really provides an opportunity to think about some of the, you know, strictures and limitations of the single original work in ways that that might be carried forward institutionally and enhance the initial impetus for the work.
I think it's interesting to say this because I think it makes legible in a way like the different readings that we all have, because in a way what you're doing from my perspective, from this provisional perspective that I'm committed to, or this philosophical perspective, I guess, what I see is that you're universalizing the investigation, and it's becoming almost a methodology, right? A strategy, which I want to resist in a way. I want to resist that turning the investigation into method, and universalizing it so it becomes really about all of the guards sharing that experience, the institution itself being transformed, because I really think that ultimately the threshold is within the guards' psychological, spatial, and social relationship, but it's not necessarily, even though it's so much about power relations, and in that sense we fundamentally agree, I think it's really about power relations from the perspective of the guard rather than ultimately as it transforms the institution in a way.
See, I tend to think, from my understanding of the original piece, I think that in some ways the original iteration of the work invited this kind of questioning but didn't quite allow it to become part of the work. And that was part of the effort that we were trying to make, is to sort of really acknowledge the ways in which that transformation occurred and was not necessarily given its full impact in terms of the way that the work existed. So, for instance, incorporating the perspectives of the guards, which is something that did not happen in the original work, I think is something that really allows the piece to extend to today and extend to a context in which museums and what they do and what their practices are imagined in very different ways.
Would you say that, Amy, do you want to jump in?
No. Go ahead.
Do you want to say that you're trying, are you trying to complete in a way what he maybe didn't finish? Is that how you would articulate it?
I don't think I would say it quite that way. I think that it's more that, at least to my mind, part of the effort is to make evident elements of the work that perhaps existed only as partially, that existed at the time, but that weren't necessarily fully acknowledged.
They weren't fully legible or articulated.
Yeah. And, from a curatorial perspective, trying to bring this project back to today, that seems to me like a very important element of it, to really try and figure out ways to acknowledge the full implications of the work and incorporate the different perspectives of the people that are part of it, and then to, also, which I think is another place that maybe we disagree a little bit, to figure out ways to offer it to the public in a way that's legible, that helps them see what's happening and understand the nature of the work, which for me is also a very key part of it, is that, as much as, we are at the museum are doing the best that we can to sort of come up with a way of acknowledging the original performance, I also think, there are elements of it that that sort of remained not fully articulated or legible, both to both within the institution and to the publics that were part of the interpretation of it. And so that's really our effort, is to sort of make some of those ideas legible and apparent for people, so that people outside of established institutional structures like museums, galleries, or academia have access to the work in a way.
Yeah, you're making visible tropes that would otherwise be maybe not visible.
Yeah.
As evident, right? Whereas I'm coming from, again, from this Bakhtinian conception of the work itself as unfinalized, but also as unfinalizable, and I'm leery in relation to my own positioning in relation to this work. I'm leery to in any way finalize or appear to see the work as anything other than unfinalizable. Like, I don't see the work as something that that can be, in a way, completed or finalized. I see it as something that's going to radically remain open, and I don't want to foreclose on.
I guess the thing that I struggle to understand, I fully embrace and see this perspective of sort of wanting to keep the work an open, unfinished thing, but I guess I don't understand why you feel that incorporating this broader perspective and trying to bring the work to the public in any way finishes the piece, because to my mind it actually opens it up. I think, by trying to allow more people in the simplest way possible the chance to see it and read a little bit about it so that they have access to what's happening, to me that instigates conversations that in fact open the work more as opposed to close it down. And so I guess that's the thing that I
think we are all committed to openness, but we arrive at openness in different ways, and we define openness in different ways. And I think I don't want to speak for you guys, but I think like you have a curatorial conception of how to curate and enable openness, and you have an archival relationship to this, and I have my own relationship to it, maybe in an artistic sensibility. And so I think we each are committed to understanding the work in all of its openness and ambiguity and indeterminacy. But I think what we do with that openness, I think, is different.
Yeah.
But, Amy, do you want to have the last word?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you, Katie. It's been very interesting. And will continue to try to get to the bottom of this.